Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Tuesday, May 1st. State lawmakers will debate whether law enforcement agencies and family members should be able to get a court order to temporarily remove a person's guns if they pose a danger. The bill has bipartisan support, but as Benta Berkland reports, it's also controversial.
Supporters of House Bill 1436 say it could save lives. Douglas County Sheriff Tony Spurlock lost Deputy Zach Parrish last year when a mentally ill man shot and killed him. Spurlock says officers had dealt with the man before. He adds there are other examples where law enforcement needs more tools to remove guns.
About 2 years ago, a mother of two children who was mentally ill and had family members begging doctors to try to help her, she went to a store, bought a gun, and with this bill in place, she would not have been able to do that. We'd have been able to protect her children. She shot both of her children and then shot herself.
The bill is named after Deputy Parrish. Opponents worry it could unfairly restrict someone's Second Amendment rights. And Republican Senate President Kevin Grantham says he doesn't like what he's seen of it so far. Lawmakers don't have much time to pass the bill. The session ends on May 9th. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
There are 476,000 people on SNAP benefits in Colorado, and advocates say food stamps not only play an important role in public health, they also help stabilize local economies. Eric Galatis has more.
As Congress heads into recess next week, a new report by the Colorado Fiscal Institute highlights the importance of SNAP, the program formerly known as food stamps, to local economies. As of March 2017, 476,000 Coloradans participated in the program, and 3 out of 4 were families with children. Elizabeth Cheever with the Institute says SNAP creates an economic ripple effect across Colorado communities because every dollar is spent at a grocery store or farmer's market in the state.
SNAP is a crucial economic stabilizer. It helps out not only the people who receive it directly, but also the communities in which they live when times are tough.
A proposed revision to SNAP, making its way through the U.S. House of Representatives, would extend work requirements to parents of school-aged children and to people up to 60 years old. Proponents argue the move would help struggling Americans re-enter the workforce instead of enabling unemployment. Cheever points out that the vast majority of participants already have at least one job, and a quarter are households with elderly or disabled family members.
86% of the families on SNAP are already working. SNAP is designed to help families while they work to overcome barriers to employment, things like illness or an anemic job market or age discrimination.
Between 2009 and 2012, SNAP kept 117,000 Coloradans out of poverty, including 55,000 children. Cheever notes the program also supports public health, especially for kids.
Children who have access to SNAP are less likely in the long term to suffer health problems. And again, that benefits all Coloradans because it means less strain on our healthcare system.
A farm bill recently advanced by the U.S. House Agriculture Committee, which includes SNAP funding, is expected to be heard by the full body when representatives reconvene in early May. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
A major piece of legislation to reform public pensions in Colorado is making its way through the state capitol. As part of our weekly capitol conversation, Marianne Goodland with Colorado Politics and Ed Sealover with the Denver Business Journal discuss how it's shaping up with State House reporter Benta Berkland.
1 in 10 Coloradans receive a public pension through this retirement system. A measure cleared the Republican-controlled Senate. It's making its way through the House. Marianne, what are some of the big changes the House is making?
The first is the number of years used to calculate the pension. As it stands right now, and depending on when you got into the system, it's somewhere between 2 and 2.5 years. The Senate version had it at 7 years, which would be the average, your highest average pay over a 7-year period. The House did 5 years, which was actually the recommendation of the Parra board. The second is in the age of retirement. Currently it's 60, depending on how many years of service. The Senate wanted 65. The House moved that back to 60. But the biggest change of all, I think, is in what's called a defined contribution plan, which is like your 401k. Parra does have a defined contribution plan, but once you're in it, you're in it. Once you're in the defined benefit plan, which is the traditional pension, you don't move into the defined contribution plan. So what the House did was to get rid of that defined contribution change on the basis that it really doesn't do anything to help PERA shore up its $32 billion unfunded liability.
The other big thing that happened was that the bill, as introduced in the Senate, required both employees and their employers, who are state government, city governments, school districts, to put in more money to help shore up this pension liability. It came out of the Senate without the employer contributions. It came out of the House Finance Committee without any contributions. They're actually using $225 million a year from the state's $1.3 billion tax windfall that they're expecting next year. And they're saying that this is going to be enough. We don't need to make anyone contribute. I think this is actually maybe the biggest sticking point. Senate Republicans say this is unrealistic. Treasurer Walker Stapleton, who's been a big advocate for PERA reform, says, you know, things a lot worse than unrealistic about that. And so the one thing that I have heard that is very different than what I heard before the session started is an acknowledgement from all parties that something needs to get done. When we started the session, Democrats were like, maybe we can do it. Maybe we can kick it to next year. Now you are hearing we have to do something. So I really do think there is going to be a way to find compromise here, but I just don't know where, because this is a giant chasm right now.
What do you think switched in some of those Democratic members' minds that they said this is imperative this session?
Well, I think you've got the governor beating on it. So he is terribly concerned about the fact that Senator Porras has said, look, if you don't take care of this unfunded liability, we're going to knock down the state's bond ratings. That means it's going to be more expensive to build college projects. It's going to be more expensive to build roadways, all of these which use some form of bonding. And I think maybe they've just heard it from enough people that, hey, we have to take care of this now.
Not long ago, teachers rallied at the Capitol because they expressed a lot of concerns about what could come out of this. Talk about that whole dynamic.
Once the House Finance Committee made those changes, the teachers got on board pretty darn quick. There was a statement issued almost immediately by the Colorado Education Association that said they were fine with the bill as it is right now. They strongly objected to pretty much everything that the Senate had done, particularly that defined contribution part of it.
Do you guys think this is something that will come down to the final days of the session?
Absolutely. I think we are seeing intense behind-the-scenes negotiations on both PERA reform and on transportation funding, and we're not seeing a ton of movement right now. So I think legislators are smart enough to realize that these are two things that are going to matter and that they're going to work extra hard on them up to May 9th.
Thanks. Ed Seelover with the Denver Business Journal, Marianne Goodland with Colorado Politics. I'm Benta Berkland, and this is Capital Conversation.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Tuesday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.